Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and it's Friday, and that means it's time for the Duff McKagan Joke of the Week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, it's Duff McKagan calling you. I'm calling you from my studio here. I don't get out to the golf course much, but I heard, do you know why the golfer brought two pairs of pants to the golf course? In case he got a hole in one. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even laugh at that one because I've heard it. I mean, I've heard that, but with socks, with pants. But listen, I'm not going to complain because Duff McKagan calls every single Friday with the joke of the week, even in the midst of Guns N' Roses rehearsals. They're working hard to get ready for the next round of dates, which is going to kick off later this month in Mexico and South America. And they're coming back to the States this summer, August 15th in Tampa. I know that. Maybe Duff will come over for a barbecue and a joke-off. It's the Summer 2020 Stadium Tour. Wow, there's not a lot of pomp and circumstance in that title, is there? The Summer 2020 Stadium Tour. Well, at least you know what it is. It kicks off July 4th in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Get your tickets at GunsNRoses.com and get your tickets to rock with Fozzy as well. We're hitting the road on the Save the World Tour starting April 16th in Savannah, Georgia. We're going to Tampa, the Rockfest, 98 Rockfest, WJR Earth Day Birthday in Orlando on the 18th. And then we're in Chattanooga, Johnson City, Charlotte. The venue we were supposed to play in Nashville got destroyed by the tornado the other day in Nashville. So we're currently looking for a new venue. Hopefully we'll find one. We're doing Louisville, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Buffalo, Iowa City, Twin City Takeover at the Target Center at Minneapolis. That's a big show. The Royal Grove in Lincoln. Rockfest in Cadott, Wisconsin on the July 16th. We got a whole bunch more gigs coming up in July and August, which I think are getting announced this week. But go to FozzyRock.com for all info. And for all VIP meet and greet information, come hang with us before the show. It's one of the greatest VIP experiences that you could ever get. And we're already sold out in Lancaster for that. I think we're sold out in Buffalo, maybe Pittsburgh. So go to FozzyRock.com now and be a part of a great experience. Hang with us. See a private show, a mini show, and just have a great rock and roll time. Speaking of great times, we got the always funny, always crazy Tom Arnold here, actor and former host of the Best Damn Sports Show, my nemesis on that show, is telling all kinds of stories about his famous friends like Arnold Schwarzenegger, what it was like shooting True Lies. He's also talking about Donald Trump and why Tom refused to do Celebrity Apprentice back in the day. And Tom knew Michael Jackson, has some thoughts about the King of Pop and last year's controversial documentary about MJ. So let's go straight to Tom Arnold right now on Talk is Jericho. Okay, so now we got our headphones on. We are here as true professionals with Tom Arnold.
Yes.
And I'm laughing because the last time we were going to do this, you couldn't make it because you have a babysitter issue. So this time you just brought the whole family.
Yeah, I don't have any issues because I have no babysitter. I'm in between it, so we go everywhere. Jax is six, Quinn is three, and I just said, you know, first of all, I told Jax, you know, Chris is a wrestler, and then he's like, I'm in. You know, I said we have a history. You know, we've worked together, Best Dad Sports Show. Period. I'm a big fan of yours.
Oh man,
personally and professionally, you know. And so here we are. The kids are, you know.
Now, is it cool for you? Are these your only two kids?
Yes, I had a Jax. I had when I was 54. You know, I've always wanted kids, and you know, I love it. I'm very, you know, people say they always want kids. And it turns out I did. Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing because, man, it's
on.
It is the best. And it's so entertaining and it's so, you know, you got to be, it's time consuming.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, you got to be more patient than I ever thought I would be. But it's also, I love it. Like, it's the best show in town, man. These two kids every day were, you know, we got stuff going. And, you know, I'm constantly trying to figure out how I can be a better father.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the amount of time that I give them and, I think that's, I had a single father myself growing up, but yeah, I don't know how he did it. He was 22 when I was 4, my sister's 3, my brother's 1. I used to think, oh yeah, he had it easy. He went to work. I'm like, oh my God, that must've been, and I was in so much trouble as a teenager, arrested. He had to bail me out 6 or 7 times. And I was like, oh, he didn't care. And I'm like, well, as soon as my son was born, I went, oh, he cared. He cared about everything because you just care about every moment.
Well, that's one of those things too, like when you're a kid, you think, oh, like my dad's on my case, what does he know? And I do the same thing to my son, God. But it's like, what does he know? Like, we know now, exactly. Right? You figure it
but
out.
But they also know, like, my daughter knows everything about me. They know if I'm BSing, you know, they you know, even when they're very small, he knew if I said, I gotta work, and if I was staring at my computer not working, or on the internet, yeah. They just knew. And the thing, the lesson I tell, you know, because I'm an older dad,
right?
There's a lot of guys who are like, hey, you know, your son's born, let your wife do everything until he's 7, then he'll be fun. And I'd always say, I don't know where I'll be when he's 7, I'm old. So, you know, I changed every diaper and you know, with my daughter, same thing. And you could feel, you know, I talked to him from day one, and you could feel the bond. And I've had friends say, you know, I didn't do that. And I did it on my second kid, and I'm closer.
Mm-hmm.
But just to get in there every moment, do everything. You might not do it perfectly. You might not do it right. But, you know, as men, you know, we got to get in there as fathers. And there's no specific role for us except to do everything and be there for our kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's when I was a kid, there was always the one dad that was older.
Yeah.
Like that you thought was that his grandfather. No, that's his dad.
Yeah.
Like that's
that happens
now.
To me. I take him to school. Okay, we had this happen. So I take him up to, he just graduated from preschool yesterday. So the kids, the people are very nice. And there's a lot of, you know, I sit in the parking lot, there's a lot of amazing mothers in their amazing yoga pants. You can see they're amazing. They get in there, man. They just do it, drop off machines. Like they just can handle so much. I just watch them in amazement. And, you know, I'm in there and sometimes I'll forget the umbrella. I'll forget a quiz or something. They're both, I can take them both to different classes. But I watch these women, they're just machines. And you know, I'm kind of getting to, you know, Jack's told me, I heard good things about you, Dad. I heard good things in the parking lot. They say good things about Tom Arnold. But anyway, I walk in there, one of his buddies, I walked in there and he's like, Dad, so said you're fat. I go, well, that's, and the mother, the kid's mother overheard it. She goes, whoa. You apologize to Mr. Arnold right now. The kid was so funny. He stopped the class. I went, oh, no, that's okay. He doesn't have to. The kid goes like this because the kid's really funny. His friend goes, I'm sorry I called you fat, Mr. Arnold. Really loud in front of you, like against an asshole. I'm like, oh, no. And the mother is very attractive and young. She goes, thank you, son. Is that okay, Mr. Arnold? I go, oh, I did not have to. And the kid was just, I'm sorry I called you fat, Mr. I mean, in front of her. I'm like, that kid, I'm going to knock it. And then, you know, but I get called, your granddaughter is very beautiful, Mr. You know, right. I get that, which I love it. It's never bothered me because I forget. If I'd have seen how old I am when I was these kids' age, I would be like, he's very old.
Mm.
But it doesn't, you don't feel old, you know? And
it makes you younger.
Oh, of course it makes
you younger. To have a young kid. Because you think about, like, you
of
know,
course it
like
does.
Paul McCartney has like a 12-year-old daughter at 77 or something.
He must, that'd be a great dad. I wish my dad was Paul McCartney.
I know, right?
Oh my God, what a great guy, too.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. I think it does keep you young and kind of reinvigorates you. Here you are, like you said, at, you know, 57, 58 or whatever you are, having these two young kids and that keeps
I'm
you.
I'm 60. Yeah.
Oh, you're 16 now. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, I say, you know, he's a big boy. He's up there. He's getting close to 3 digits there. And, you know, he'll say, Daddy, I'll carry Quinn to bed. He'll say, will you carry me? He feels so once in a while, will you carry me to bed? And I go, all right, I will carry you upstairs to bed. I'll put you on my shoulders. And because, I mean, you're like this too, I'm sure. I'm going to lift you up. I want to do that as long as I can. So
right.
I will pick him up and, You know, we do, you know, I'm going to, he deserves it. And then, by the way, his sister deserves my attention and my physical attention. We do a lot of physical stuff. You know, she'll say, too, well, girls aren't as strong as boys. I'll say, stop. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Girls are as strong as boys, and you can do anything. And his sister, and he'll tell you this, she is a bad ass. She's a small little kid. I know she can do anything. In fact, what will your sister do to us at night if we don't pay enough attention to her? She will kill us in our sleep.
Oh, that's what she says.
I said that one time to him. And of course, he told his mom when he went over there. Yeah, and then I got in trouble. But she will. I said, son, you got to pay attention. You got to respect your sister because I'm telling you, because she gets a, you know, she doesn't require a lot. But if we, if when she wants attention, son, we have to stop the presses and give her attention because it's the three of us, you know?
Yeah.
And she plays, she supports him. She plays his games. But there's a certain point when she goes, oh no, it's my time. Yeah.
Yeah, he was telling a story.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, though. Yeah. You mentioned having, like, the physical presence and all that stuff, because, yeah, like, you got to enjoy, like, lifting it. Like, my kids are 15 now, almost 16, my son is, and I have twin daughters that are almost 13. And there's no lifting them up anymore.
No.
The kissing on the lips, yeah, done.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Even with my girls now, they're like, yeah, that's just weird, Dad. Like, it's, yeah, just, you know, and you're like, the first time they do that, you're like, oh.
Yeah. I've been thinking that, too.
Yeah.
Like, the first time he said I didn't have to walk him all the way into school,
mm-hmm,
I stopped. I was pulled out of the parking lot. And I mean, that's just that. So I imagined when.
Yeah, like every little step moment, that you go, yeah, right. You know?
I mean, you go to yourself, well, that's exactly the right thing. That's healthy, but jeez. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like you said,
how do you do
it's
that?
The stage of life, but you got to just accept it and move on because they're growing up.
It means you're doing everything exactly right.
Yes.
But jeez, and then. You know, with your girls, and then, you know, when they get older, and then they're on their, you know.
There's bras getting involved,
right,
and all this other stuff.
And then relationships, and then, you know, and people, somebody said, you know, as a father, you give your daughter to a man to marry. You don't.
Mm-hmm.
You never, she's your daughter for real.
Yeah. I mean,
every molecule of her, you know, since she's been born. So, I mean, it makes, you know.
You mentioned when you were growing up that you got arrested a couple of times. What did you get arrested for?
Well, I did get public nudity, son. Yes, that's why. But I got, you know, fighting with the police. You know, it was interfering with official acts. A lot of drunken, you know. I am an alcoholic, but I don't drink anymore, son. I haven't had a drink in almost 30 years. And I've dealt with many drugs and alcohol. What's that? What do you say?
I can't tell what he's saying. We got to get you a microphone.
What's that, Sonny? 12 million, yes, yeah, Betty. But, you know, I grew up in a small town in Tumble, Iowa,
mm-hmm,
or factory town. And
how many people live there?
And 20,000.
Okay, gotcha.
But that's pretty good size for the area, but I have to. But you know, people, you know, it was from a young age, probably 12, we started drinking pretty heavily, and you know, we had a lot of altercations with the police. There was three drunk drivings, and just if something that we do. My mother, who didn't raise us but was married seven times, was at one point married to the chief of police, who hated me. And so we'd go out and fight him. And our deputies, the sheriff's deputies, were just giant redneck,
yeah,
men who would just, we'd go out and then end up squaring up with these guys. And then, you know, we talk about sports, and then I ended up in a football game next to them somewhere. Mm-hmm. I remember Bruce Allen, he's about 6'5", and I went into, this was one time I got arrested. I was in McDonald's drinking a beer, and he comes in there and he kicks me out of McDonald's for drinking a beer. And so I went around the outside. He sat down in McDonald's to eat, and I went around the outside and saw and looked at him through the window and gave him the finger. And then instead of leaving in my car, I went to the restroom on the outside of McDonald's, and he got up. My friend said he got up, put his hat on, came in the back of that restroom, and I was at the urinal, and he took his fist and jammed, punched me in the back of the head of the urinal, and I didn't get it. Then tackled me. I didn't get a chance to put my pants on, really. Handcuffing me on my back. And so that was one time, you know, and then as we're going to the Tumble jail, Wampa County Jail, I was in the backseat of the car, and I lifted my boot up, and I kicked him in the back of the head as he's driving to jail. He pulled the car over, and he pulls me out. Now I'm handcuffed behind my back. I'm like, oh, I'm so screwed. It just started wailing on me. And then he realizes, oh, he's beaten up pretty good. So then he just takes me to my dad's yard, because then he's not taking me to jail, because that's too, it's too much. And then my dad sees me out there, and he's like, just takes me to the house. There's sort of a cycle of things. But, you know, and then the following week was Iowa played Tennessee in the Peach Bowl, which is an old Fulton County Atlanta Coliseum. And my friends and I had gotten in a car. We drove down there, and I was sitting next. I went to the stadium, and I sat next to freaking Bruce Allen, this cop that had just had this brutal fight in his car. But yet we were in an Iowa football game, and everything was fine. You know, we're
right,
like,
because you're all there on the same team.
Yes, we are. And really, I also saw a compassion for those guys, because they're like, what is this kid? This kid just is crazy. Like, you know, and I'm related to half the cops. My son wants to be a policeman.
Right.
That's what he said. At the end of his school, they took the pictures. I looked through his thing, and he said, I want to be a policeman because I want to protect people. And that makes me proud of him, you know, for the right things, the right reasons. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a lot of nonsense on my part. There was some on some of the cops' parts that I grew up with at a different time. But that is a rough. And then out of high school, I wanted to go to college, so I had to work in the meat packing plant for 3 years. Because my dad's like, if you want college, you need to earn it. So I worked on the kill floor of the Hormel meat packing plant for 3 years.
What's the kill floor?
That's where you slaughter them.
What it sounds like.
Oh, my God. But it was a hard, it was what we did, and it was the best job in town. And then I got the money to go to the University of Iowa, where I could become an entertainer and things, because that was my dream. But I'll tell you what, that is a rough job there. There's a lot of drinking. If you're a drunk and you like to get in fights, the kill floor of meatpacking plant, the behind the Union Hall, because everything is, and by the way, everybody has knives in a meatpacking plant, like the sharpest knives, the stickers. Yeah, I mean, you will be, and people talk a lot about guns, but if you get a fight with somebody that's good with a knife and a meatpacking plant, you couldn't even get your gun out. The sticker, because the sticker who worked next to me is the highest job in a meatpacking plant.
It's called a sticker.
Sticker, because when a hog goes up to shoot, and that's happened 6,000 times a day, drive up the chute, gets a little electric shock in his back, but it drops down. Another guy takes a chain, gets it on his back, a hoof, gets him up in the air, and the sticker just jabs him in the throat, and the blood comes out of him that quick. And that guy, he just has his knife under this sheath, this long knife, just sits there like the Dr. Death all day, and he's just sharpening it. That guy, man, that guy was just, that's a badass
job. Oh, you got to be nuts to do that job, completely. Too, right? Completely, yeah.
But so would there be a fight? And what happened is the older meatpackers would start, they'd come in and go, you know, Arnold, Cummings over there at Hembo says you're gay. And I'm like, what? You guys got to be behind the union hall. And what they're doing is they made people like me their monkey. Mm-hmm. They're entertaining, because it's boring to work in there. So you couldn't fight in the plant. So they had these stupid fights, which now I think it's charming, because they'd have us young guys going, all right. So everybody, the old guys have everybody around a circle, and then a couple punches, then it's over. Then everybody had to go buy shots for everybody. That's what our union did. We'd be so drunk, you'd be drinking with the same guy you fought with. And there would also be a bond because of the physical contact. Yeah. If a guy really fought with you and you were up close, you're like, okay, that guy and I, we did something.
Yeah, I mean, I went through that in Winnipeg, which is a little bit bigger, but it's the same idea.
Winnipeg.
Prairie town, you know, middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. You would get in a fight with somebody and then literally shake hands afterwards.
Of course you would.
You get beaten the shit of each other. Like you said, then you shake hands afterwards, you go your own way, and that's the end of it. Right? That's kind of the way that it was for us.
That is exactly what it's about. And it's hard to explain that to people, to women, to other people, but there is that bond, and then you do have this respect for, you know, I can't explain it, but, you know, and then you also, you're kind of over it.
Mm-hmm. You're over, and you go to have a drink.
Yeah.
And there's no shooting somebody after
or
killing them after. It's like it's a fist fight, no weapons.
Yeah.
It's like a movie. No, we want a fist fight, no weapons. But that's just the way it was.
Well, you also look at yourself like, we're two guys in the middle here.
Yeah.
And everybody else is around the circle. And they're doing, but we are the only two guys that know what this felt like. in this middle section, and it was kind of awful. It was kind of good, but our two faces are smacked up against each other. These other guys, you know, they may think they're cool, but you know what? They may say that this group says they're my friends, and that says they're your friends, but you know, we're the ones that were in here. So we did this one thing together. So, you know,
I also find if you're going to talk about, like you said, like coming from Winnipeg or Iowa, Ottumwa, yeah. And you mentioned, you know, going to make it in show business, and here you are 40, 30 years of being in the business and always working. It's harder to make it from a small town than it would be coming from a bigger one. I find it makes you have a bigger work ethic and to take more chances are you the most famous person from Ottumwa, Iowa?
Well, yeah. You know, we had a, hi, beautiful girl.
No, there's your daughter's in here.
Yes,
now.
She is. Oh, gave me a kiss on the show. Oh my God, I love her so much. We had a Miss Universe in 1956. Of course, we do it. Before I was born, Carol Morris. You know, can you imagine having a Miss Universe from our small town?
Mm-hmm.
And then,
of all the places, yeah.
I am sure we had a fictional character named Raiden O'Reilly, who's on a TV show called MASH. But
he was from Ottumwa.
Yes.
Right.
But, you know, anything that's from Iowa or where I'm from, we just celebrate it. I know anybody, any other actors that's from where we're from, and you're probably like it if you hear Winnipeg and somebody's there, you're like, oh, yeah, there's that bond. And, you know, and I don't know if you like that with all of Canada, you know.
I think it's more of just a Winnipeg. Yeah. Like, I know, like at the time, I mean, Neil Young's from Winnipeg.
Yes.
Jericho's from Winnipeg. So maybe one of the more famous people from Winnipeg. And then when that movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, was really hot.
Yes.
She was from Winnipeg, Naya Vardalos. Yeah.
Oh, she is?
And so they're saying, Naya Vardalos, the most famous Winnipegger. I'm like, bullshit.
Yeah.
She's got one movie.
Well, first of all, I didn't know she was from Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Hold the horses.
Oh, there we go.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. So it kind of took my place for one. I was a little bit jealous of her, Miss Vardalos, hot shot.
Yeah.
But there's no one coming from Ottumwa now.
No, but it's not. Winnipeg's much bigger than
Ottumwa. Yeah, much bigger.
Let's be honest here. But you know, we had a bunch at Arnold's at our big fundraiser Saturday night. We had a bunch of people from Calgary.
Mm hmm.
And, you know, it was cowboy night too, let me just say this. And, you know, I brought up. I said we had this guy that is the only Canadian, I think he's the only North American to detonate a suicide bomb in Afghanistan military, and he'd won this thing, so he got to come there, and this man, and so I'm telling Arnold about the not that this, I'm getting off book here,
no,
about
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Stampede. Yeah, I'm telling Arnold about the Calgary Stampede, which if you've been there, especially like 20 years ago, 25. Even if you're from Iowa and you've done rodeo, if you've done all the stuff we've done, to go up and sit there and watch them back in the day with the stagecoach races were so out of control. People died, number one.
Right.
They literally died. And it was a big honor to die there. And just the horses were dying all over the place. You could not do that now. It is so illegal and so bad and so crazy. And I'm explaining it to Arnold. How insane it was for humans and animals and crazy. And he's like, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard of. But you can only do that in Canada. And so, you know, yeah, Winnipeg is a, you know.
Well, I mean, like you said, it's a prairie town, not much going on. But when you
mentioned, still have a hockey team?
Winnipeg
I'm
Jets.
I'm kidding.
Well, yeah, we wonder about that. But you just mentioned Arnold, like, are you guys still pretty good friends?
Very good friends. Very good friends. You know, Saturday night we had our after school all-star big event, and
that's his big charity that he works with.
And we've done it together for 20 some years. I mean, we have 10,000 gifts at the Hollenbeck Youth Center every Christmas. We do it, get together there. We give turkeys on Thanksgiving. There's a million things to do together. The Special Olympics. We, you know, we've stayed friends. We did True Lies together, and I thought, first of all, this movie, I bet all movies are like this, and it turns out no. You know, I've done 130, four good ones, I always say. But we stayed friends, and we don't always agree on things. I don't, you know, our politics are a little different. I go at things a little different. I say things to people a little different, but we are brothers, and I'll tell you, man, through thick and thin. And I admire him so much because he gets up every day, man, and just seizes the day. And I have so much respect for him. He came to our country in 1968 with like a short shorts and a sticky tank top and 20 cents. And he's a billionaire, and he was governor. He's done everything he ever dreamed of. I mean, and he still wants more.
Mm-hmm.
And he is of service to people. You know, like these organizations are all about serving people, making things better, and then you go help people. You get off your ass. You go do something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I admire that. And I live for being of service, because you get so much out of that. And he walks the walk, you know, and he's a funny son of a bitch, too. And, you know, he's loyal, and I'm very loyal to him. And, you know, he, again, we've had some, you know, we've disagreed mm-hmm. on things. And, but yet, you know, we've always stepped up for each other.
He was at a fundraiser in Tampa about a year ago at a friend of mine's house, big money guy. His name is Todd Wagner.
Oh, yes, I know. Yeah. That was for the, that was for
same thing.
Ask All Stars. Yep.
Exactly. So Arnold was there, and
oh, yes.
He asked me if I wanted to smoke a cigar with him, and I'm not a cigar smoker, but if Arnold asked you to smoke a cigar, I'll smoke a cigar. So I'm smoking it, and do those things, like, they start getting a little bit high.
Oh, sure.
And he goes, "What do you think of the cigar?" I said, "It's starting to get me high." He goes, "Why do you think I smoke them?"
Oh, yeah, he'll do that. Oh, yeah, he'll do that.
Yeah.
You know what? He, this guy, let me tell you what. When he has a few stops, let me tell you something. He does get squirrely. I'll tell you. First of all, Todd, that raised a bunch of money. That's what thing you're at raised a shitload of money.
Right.
For the After School Search.
Yes.
And I'll tell you something about where you were. We had a kid speak from the Miami area. This kid was he was about 13, no parents, had a mother, sort of, and he was in trouble. A couple of his kids' friends got murdered. He was on the streets. He had nowhere to go between 3 and 6 after school, and we got him involved with us, and he spoke Saturday night. He's a Miami cop now. He's not only a Miami police officer, he's a honored Miami police officer, this young man.
And what this organization is just so you know, is it gives kids something to do between their school ending and between their parents come home from work.
Yeah. Where they trouble do, time. When people get on drugs, when people get in fights. Like
join trouble. Gangs and stuff. This provides after-school programs, sports, for kids to be involved with something that keeps them off the streets and keeps them out of trouble.
And that was a huge thing that Todd Wagner, that you participated in. I'll tell you an Arnold High story. When he was governor, he's a showman. So what he was going to do, he's talking about getting business in California. And he had a semi truck and he was going to drive it across the border of Nevada into, California. He was going to drive it. No, obviously we've seen Donald Trump sit in a semi and do whatever he's doing anyway. So Arnold's going to drive it. So he's up there and he's waiting to film this, and he can't smoke a cigar in the rig because that would look bad. You're not supposed to be smoking in the van, whatever the law was. So he started to jones a little bit. He needs a cigar. So he'd asked me for some Nicorette. I chew a ton of Nicorette, like 4 milligrams. He doesn't. But he'd asked me for some Nicorette. I said, "Here, take this." I gave him one of those packages with 12.
Mm.
So he doesn't. So all of a sudden he goes on. He's like, I'm gonna chew some Nicorette. He takes 4 of them, puts them in his mouth once. That's 16 milligrams. He starts chewing it. All of a sudden, they're like, "Roll, drive." He starts driving. He's like, starts hallucinating. He's driving. Like, "What the fuck? I'm hallucinating." As they're filming him, as he's like, "Come to California." I swear to God. So I tell that story on Letterman, and in his office gets a million calls the next day. Was he hallucinating? He's like, Tom Arnold said, you know, it's true. But there are so many times when he was governor, he had to go, "I don't know what Tom's talking about." You know, every time I go on Howard Stern, every time. But, you know, he did. He, because he's like, "Oh, this is gum. This is regular gum. I'm going to put it in my mouth." But it's actually medicine. And so then he started, like, if you're not used to it, like that cigar. He's used to those cigars.
Right.
Which are very strong, but he's not used to having 16 milligrams of
as the governor of California.
And, you know, he's had the heart stuff, so, you know, God, I would have felt bad if that would have been his last. Anyways,
did you see what just happened to him a couple weeks ago where that guy drop-kicked him from behind when he was, like, in Africa or something?
First of all, it may be bad, you know, because I'd have been, you know, I am like, you, if somebody does that to my friend, for his bodyguard wasn't looking, he's doing a crap job. He's right in the middle of people. I'm very proud of him. He didn't budge. I knowing Arnold, I believe 100% he didn't feel it or know who the guy was. He's sort of unaware, like, you know, and he is like 72, and the guy got a running freaking kick. Like, he, this jerk, you know, I mean, I would have, you know, because I want,
he had it so well.
Oh yeah, he did. And you know, anytime, but his giant bodyguard took his eye off the freaking ball. Mm. You got to keep your, you know, but, he did handle it well. I mean, it went great. You know, if I would say that, but you know, that's a, the people are,
that's crazy. People do that.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah. But, you know, let's be honest. If that was, you and I were there and our buddy, someone kicked one of our buddies like that, and we would have been an attack. There would have been some extra.
That's what I'm saying. That's how you can tell he's a consummate professional of just not reacting, because I would have lost my fucking mind.
Oh yeah, of course.
I would have chased the guy down. Yeah,
of course.
You know,
I would have got
dragged him across the chin
into his eye socket. I for sure would have done something like
completely overreacted to it. You know?
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
And if it had been your friend,
yes,
your older friend, you then even you would have licensed to freaking kill. Yeah. And you just the move thing you wouldn't even see. Well, you know.
Yeah.
There's a million dirty things you could have done. Just, I got this guy. You know?
But now everyone's filming it now, though. That's the difference. Yeah. You have to be careful, right?
Yeah, but maybe. Yeah,
in that case,
okay, that's like a ticket to, you know.
Yeah, it's a free pass.
To kill.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
You mentioned True Lies before. Yeah. Was that the biggest movie you ever did?
Well, it was the most successful financially. You know, I've had some other movies that were actual movies that opened number one. Obviously, it was. I mean, Jim Cameron and Arnold and I are still friends, and Jamie Curtis and, you know, Bill Paxton, we were friends until the day he died. I loved him so much, and such a good experience. Elijah Dushku, we're very good friends, and you know, just so many people from that movie, the Stuntman, and, you know, it just was, and people love that movie, and it holds up. Movies don't hold up necessarily, you know. I did a couple movies with Steven Seagal, and I loved, because I was the comic relief with Anthony Anderson. That holds up, and there's so many good people in there, but I don't know that Steven Seagal and I, we never, it was funny when I was filming with him.
Which movie was that?
Exit was The Cradle to the Grave. No, I did get, gotcha. You know, I did, one was with Jet Li, who is so awesome. I was so fanboyed out to be with Jet Li, because Jet Li's the real deal.
Yeah.
Like, no. And I think it was Tito Ortiz and Chuck
Liddell.
Yeah, they were in it with us, and they got to kind of spar with him, like for real. Like they go, okay, let's go. He went, and they were like, what? And he's like the real. He kept getting behind them. He's very small, and he was very fast. Kept getting behind him, doing stuff with their fingers. Like he does this weird. I don't know how to explain the type of martial arts that Jet Li did, but he's choreographed. Like, this wasn't when they were shooting. This was messing around, and he he's not a puncher, obviously, but he gets behind you and does stuff to your body that was, and they were like, this guy, I can't, you could never catch him, never, and then he hurts you in ways that makes you, you know, I don't know if it's from the Bruce Lee, and I'm saying stuff that I don't understand, so I was watching them and engaged with him. Just, you know, he was bringing them down because of doing this stuff. But the everybody has so much respect for him, because he could run outside the cage at that time and run up on the top. But we all were just worshiping Jet Li.
It was kind of like a martial arts all-star movie with all these guys that are in it.
And by the way, Steven Seagal couldn't lift his leg. That was the funniest part. And he'd come out there and he had lifted up a little bit, and he had to. Oh, but the best part is he would color in his hair with a Sharpie, like an extra inch. They had a beautiful wig for him. But he's like, oh no, I will do the Sharpie. But and then DMX, you know the rapper.
Yeah.
He was, and DMX was, oh, what a sweet soul. But he had never done a movie, so he didn't know if we were, he'd like have a beer in his hand and we'd be shooting and he has dogs, like literally these just violent dogs and remote control cars. It'd be like my 6-year-old son.
Cradled to the grave. Yeah, yeah, there you yeah. go. Yeah.
And Exit was the other one. And,
oh, wow.
They were fun. And they did pretty well, but my trailer was between DMX and Steven Seagal, and what a place to be. The music, the different music, and you know, I wouldn't change a thing about it. Anthony Anderson and I got to do comedy together, and it was great, and so many of the, you know, so many great people, and I just I went back to Russia a couple years ago with a lot of the same people, and did some martial arts movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger of Russia. So, you know, we run into each other occasionally.
So I just love the diversity and the longevity of your career, because you said 130 movies,
yeah.
But all the TV and the and the Best Damn Sports Show and all this sort of stuff. I mean, what is the secret to your longevity?
Well, you just have to keep working. Now that I have these kids, I mean, the sports show, that came along. And one day somebody called. I went to one of these NFL charity things, and a guy, producer George Greenberg, said, hey, would you like to do a sports show? And I was like, oh, yeah. He goes, well, we got this thing. We're going to try it at Fox with a baseball player, a football player, a basketball player, and a comedian. I said, well, who you got? He goes, we got John Kruk for the baseball. I go, oh, I'm in.
He was great.
Yeah, I love him. I love Bob Letterman. And I said, but this is only going to last like 6 weeks because nobody will. And then, you know, it lasted for me, I think, 4 years. It was awesome. Every day I met my idols. I didn't have to be objective. I didn't have to be a journalist. I would sit next to people that I've worshipped my whole life as a kid. And I got...
And this was 5 days a week, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and we didn't know what we were doing, so we didn't have any rules. And we got to experiment, and nobody was watching because it wasn't on... Fox didn't have a real sports network at the time, so we were on 19 regional networks. So it might air in Columbus, Ohio at 7:14 after the right. hockey game or 8:19 somewhere else. And so they, you know, depending on what sports, you know, but it was so fun. And Chris Rose and John Sally and Michael Irvin and just a bunch of.
Who were some of your favorite guests that were on there? Some of the favorite moments
Michael
that you had?
Strahan, who started, you know, who had a famous April Fool's fight. Which is still, they still play it. It's the best because it did, because.
An actual fight?
Well, here's the deal. They call me on, they say, hey, listen, everybody knows on April Fool's Day, there's going to be April Fool's jokes. So you know it's bullshit, right? The producer calls me, goes, hey, what I want to happen is I want you to do an April Fool's joke and say that you've written a book, come back. And I wasn't on the Showtime. Come back and then we'll mock up a book and have you bad-mouthing Strahan and the other guys on the show, and then we'll say April Fools, it's not real, and then you and Chris Rose, the host, will be on, nobody else. And I go, well, okay. So I call Michael Strahan and go, listen, he doesn't know, he's not supposed to, I'm going to go hard on you in this fake book, and then I want you and I to get in an actual fight. I'm not telling the producers that we do this, and then we'll freak everybody out. And he goes, okay, which is great. Now, Chris Rose doesn't know I talked to him, so we start going at, and I said, yeah. And Michael Strahan, I go, I talk about you in this book, about how we talk privately, about Tiki Barber. It's real stuff that Michael Strahan really talked about. And then I go about, and the other athletes, at the time it was Rob Dibble and Rodney Pete. They're like, well, you know, you shouldn't talk about people. I go, well, too bad, okay? I was really shitty to them. And I go, yeah, it's too bad. And then Michael Strahan, he acted really well. He starts getting a dig. He goes, well, Tom, I go, oh, yeah, I don't care. And then eventually Chris Rose was getting so uncomfortable, he was going to say, okay, it's an April Fool's joke. And then I knew I had to act. I stuck my finger in Michael Strahan's face. And then he just lunges at me. And then it's like, whoa, if you watch the playback, they play it every – and he jumped on top of me. The other guys – by the way, Rob Dibble weighed about 300 pounds. So did Rodney Pete. He was so fat. They come into the meeting. It looks like I flipped Strahan down and I got him. He pretended like he hurt his pec because he'd been out for the Giants, who are my team, by the way. And everybody freaks out. And they go to black. It's a Friday night. And what happened is in the booth, the director goes, well, that's it. Tom Arnold finally killed the show. And then he ended up jumping up and saying April Fool's after we cut. And in New York, where he plays football, they saw him get injured.
Oh,
it was a big deal. The Giants had to make a statement, but it was so good that I came back the following Monday. But I ended up with a cut eye and a cracked rib for those fuckers trying to bring up the fight. 300-pound quarterback Rodney Peete at the time. And then Rob Dibble, who, you know, they lunged on me, but it was worth it.
You know what's funny? I haven't heard that name, Rob Dibble, in years. Yeah. And in 1994, I was living in Knoxville, and I went to Cincinnati to see a Metallica concert, and Rob Dibble was there. And afterwards, he took us to the Cincinnati Stadium.
Yes.
He used to play for the Reds,
oh,
right?
Yes, he did.
And he got to the gate, and he just, like, you know, and the security guard comes out, and he's like, ar-ar. It's like, oh, hey, Rob, can we just go in there? Sure. Open the gate and kind of, like, drinking on home plate, pissing on third base.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just, I had forgotten about
that.
You mentioned his name.
There for sure.
He's a
legend.
Who else did you get to
well,
meet on
again,
that show?
You know, I sat next to Willie Mays and Ernie Banks. I mean, any big athlete at the time, you know, Donald Trump used to come on the show. I went to the Playboy Mansion with Donald Trump, and I wasn't the creepy guy because we went to visit his girlfriend when he was married. But yet I went with my buddy to visit his girlfriend when he was married, knowing he was married. So I was a creepy guy. I wasn't the most, but I'd known him 30 years before, is the thing.
For Trump.
Yeah. So, and then obviously our friendship faded.
Well, we got to talk about this, yeah, because you mentioned it a few times. I know you even did the Apprentice on the show.
No, I did do The Apprentice. I would not do it.
Do The Apprentice.
I absolutely would not do it. I couldn't see an upside to doing that. You know, I was friendly with Mark Burnett at the time, and Donald, when he started The Apprentice, he started coming on the sports show, and, you know, he did do a thing where he's like, hey, guys, before we start, I'm out here out of loyalty to Tom Arnold. And when he would say that, it makes you feel good about yourself. You're like, well, that's cool. But, you know, hi, beautiful girl. Hi, but when the birther stuff started with Barack Obama.
That he wasn't born in the States.
Yeah, all of a sudden out of nowhere, like, he's like, okay, whatever your politics are, Barack Obama's an amazing American success story. Like,
sure.
And he won, and it's over. Why come in there and go, okay, it's like a rich guy in college, a frat guy coming into your kegger going, okay, poor people, nope, I got this. Your party doesn't count. And when he started doing that, I called up Mark Burnett because he was on The Apprentice time, and they'd been calling my house for me to do the show and offering me money, and we were friendly up to that. I said, this is outrageous. He's on TV saying that Barack Obama was born in. This is so racist. What are you going to do about it? And nobody did anything about it. And that really was a turning point for our country where people did go, whoa, you can't. This is, we get what this is. It's a conspiracy, number one. It's racist. And you can't, to make a man to go, hey, you little black man, I'm going to make you show me your birth certificate. I am a big, rich, white man. You know, because I knew what that was. Plus, Barack Obama. Now, I grew up without a mother in a small farming town. And I will tell you this. If you grow up and your family is different at all in a small farming town, Barack Obama's family is from Kansas. I grew up in Iowa. And your family's different, you will get picked on. And my grandpa had to defend my ass as a kid because there'd be like, you don't have a mother. His grandpa, who looks just like my grandpa, I've seen pictures of him. You know, and there's a story about, I saw Barack Obama talking about, went to a rocket launch, went to the Kennedy Space Station, and he saw his grandpa's shoulders watching this rocket come down. He doesn't say, oh, I'm a black kid on my grandpa's. He's just talking about how great it was to be on his grandpa's shoulders. Now, you know damn well that his grandpa, he's a black kid in that little town. His grandpa's had to step up and go, hey, mother, that's my grandkid. So I always felt this thing, and imagine his grandpa is long dead, and his mother's dead when Donald Trump's on TV saying this. His mother can't go, hold on, that's my son. He was born here. He came for me. Nobody could defend Barack Obama. And his grandpa, I was just like, his grandpa would kick the shit out of Donald Trump right now for saying, my grandson grew up to be the president of the United States. How dare you? And so it was a very personal, you know, thing, because where we come from, you just don't do that. You just don't do that. And, you know, maybe Barack Obama has too much class or whatever to do that, but really, you just don't do that. And from that then on, I just like...
That was the deterioration of your friendship from there.
Well, that's... it's not... You just don't do that. Then you have to answer. And it's also not just him, it's everybody else.
Sure.
It's like, oh, that's fine. It's not... No. So let's take a beat. Let's talk about that. It's not fine. You don't... Man to man, because he would also come on the sports show. And if you're going to be, you know, say, well, he tried to buy a football team. He says he was good at sports. And another thing you do to come on the show is he kind of would do this, the soul head shape, kind of, and he is a big dude.
He's tall.
And he kind of would do, kind of get up on the guys, kind of shake the hands. And I always say to him, these athletes, I'm going to tell you, yeah, don't ever kid yourself. They will beat the fuck out of you. Mm-hmm. I always say, it seems like we can take them because they're our size.
Right.
But even the small ones, the hockey players, those little, they'll kill you. I just want to tell you, they have a magic. And I always say this, man, when that light turns on, and I've seen it with athletes a million times. I've seen it when they're sitting on the couch and somebody will come on, an actor, and they'll play a game with them, and then they'll lose. I saw Michael Irvin, for instance. I love Michael Irvin. I love everything. Ashton Kutcher came on, and we were throwing passes, and it's a big honor. Ashton Kutcher's a big kid too, but he caught one. He got around, knocked something down with Michael Irvin, and I saw something happen with Michael Irvin. He's like, okay, let's do that again. And we're on the cement in the studio, and he knocked Ashton Kutcher on his ass. That light for a second. The athletes, professional athletes, they just have a magic.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't have, and when the light goes on, you're doomed.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he always do that handshake with the guys, like, you know, and I would say, yeah, you know, just know this. Like I would say it sort of as a friend, like, hey, just heads up on this stuff. And then you also talk at locker room, you know, which we all, believe me. And that's another thing about the Donald Trump tape. We made tapes on the sports show when people would leave. There's disgusting. I made tapes for people because, you know, guys like, here's your tape. Are you getting married? Look at this. Hey, there's tapes of me doing those horrible things, which is great because I will never be the president, nor do I want to be. But you
don't want that out there when you're just thinking that you're talking to your buds.
It is right. But it's so funny. I don't even care. It's,
right. Gotcha.
But, you know, whatever. But I'm also not judging other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm not saying I am the arbiter of all. I'm just saying I'm a guy. And so when you start judging other people and making policy for other people, then it becomes a problem. So anyway.
What was the missing tapes of Donald Trump, though, that you were looking for?
They're there. They're every moment.
What are they?
Well, there's every moment on The Apprentice, from the moment he got out of his car, because The Apprentice is a game show.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a game show scandal in the 50s here in the United States. It was a show called, I think it was a $54,000 question, where they cheated.
Yeah.
So the federal government passed a law that they have to film the host of a game show and the contestant. They have to prove that the sponsor isn't feeding the answers. So Donald Trump is filmed from the moment he leaves his car through the entire day, every day that he's on The Apprentice for 14 years. All of that footage, 18 cameras, it's on HD digital, is stored in two places, Hutchinson, Kansas, where MGM stores all their movie and television footage. It's on LTO tape, which is linear tape open. It's never been seen or edited. That's there. So all this time, people are like, oh, this doesn't, I've never heard him say this. I've never heard him say this. Or, oh, no, it's all there. No one's seen it. And he's desperate for people to see because it's HD, him, his kids, all the stuff he said, all the stuff he did. And my thing is, he's the president. If you want to know what's going on in the White House, and you will see this now, everything. You know, I've just released a bunch of tapes of Michael Cohen. People are like, Tom Arnold does not know Michael Cohen. He took a selfie with him. Well, it turns out I do know him.
Mm-hmm.
And piece by piece, I put that out there. And this Apprentice stuff, it was Mark Burnett said, oh, I sold the company to MGM. I have no control over it, which was a lie. But, you know, I'm best friends with Donald Trump. I have no control. Well, now a person's been brought in. After Mark Burnett and I got a fist fight at the Emmy party, which I won. He put his hand, his fingers like that around my windpipe. I think he was with some people for the Bear Grylls show, which I was on, by the way, which is a legit show.
Right.
Bear Grylls is a badass, I will say. Yeah. But I didn't see it coming. It was dark. I was coming up the stairs, but I ended up ripping his Jesus chain.
So you put his hands in your throat and you took him out.
Yeah, he came out here like this, up. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And the guy from Survivor, Jeff Probst, was with him. He's like, you're choking him. And I'm like, oh, you got to be. Let me get, first of all, I was still coming upstairs. So I grabbed his belt loop and I go, you better let me get my balance so we can fight there. As they sort of pulled him off of this thing here, then I got a little bit of air between. So I'm like, bam, I just wanted to get something off his face. The unfortunate thing is, as I got to the top of the stairs, that's where all the rich people were. This is the biggest Emmy party, the Katzenberg Motion Picture Home Party. So nobody could see me coming up the stairs. But as we got to the top of the stairs and squared up, this is where all the famous people are. So what they saw was Tom Arnold going, what the f-?
Punch him.
I just got him. And but the fact that he would do that, because I'm questioning Donald Trump and I'm saying, I need to see this stuff. And I'd asked him, you need to show this stuff for the country because I know what's on it because my friends work on your show and I've seen it. And I don't like being called a liar by this guy. And you say, don't. Anyway, somebody's new has been brought in. And like everything else, you'll see it. And why is that important? Well, I think the truth is important. Well, what will it do? It's like Obama's. It's you ask Obama for his birth certificate. This is what happens. It's karma.
Yeah. Well, as we start to wind down here, as your daughter's offering you more Pringles. the movie that I just watched recently of yours was Dead Aunt, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
I mean, what a great B-movie, rock and roll, mockumentary type of thing.
It was very fun.
Did you have a good time with that?
I did.
Yeah.
I loved it. You know, I got to play a movie or a TV, a music promoter, a music manager. The show must go on. You know, there's a guy named Shep Gordon that's a very good friend
of mine.
I know.
Oh, me too. I love Shep. I stayed in his place in Maui.
Well, that's where my wife and I got married.
Oh, right on.
There.
Best guy.
Shep has been a friend for 30-some years. We super matched the documentary.
Yeah.
Our buddy Mike Myers made that, you know, that we're all in it. I love Shep Gordon. His place in Maui is...
I forgot you were in that.
Away from home. Yeah. So I played a version of Shep. So that's what I was thinking the whole time. The show must go on, no matter what. You know, with Alice Cooper, the chicken got thrown in the crowd. The cannon would not go off. I mean, Alice Cooper, I love as a human being, as a performer, just the most hilarious guy.
Yeah.
His stories are hilarious. He's also an incredible survivor.
Yeah,
just a hilarious. And he's still out there just kicking ass. And Shep is still his manager. But this is
if giant ants attacked Alice Cooper, Shep would make him keep going.
Okay, we're getting to the show. Okay, you're missing your arm. I'm missing my. We're getting to this goddamn show. I mean, that's just what I kept saying. You know, it was just a lot of fun.
So, how do you decide to do these type of things? I'm sure you get a lot of offers that come across your desk, and then a movie about giant ants attacking a washed-up rock band.
I made sure that there were a couple actors. I said, hey, what if you could get these guys? What if you could get the guy that played Billy Walsh on The Apprentice to be with Gary Busey's son? Jake Busey's son.
Yeah.
Guys you could see with big wigs on, but it would really buy in. And the guys who played the band really bought in. And then a couple of the women were musicians, and a couple of people I'd worked with before. The young gal, she's in this new, there's sex in it. This new HBO show that just opened up on Spacey on it. Sydney Sweeney. She's amazing. She plays the young gal, and she's so funny. Now she's a big star. I was just kind of, the director, he'd done a bunch of special effects stuff and came over to my house and showed me that he could make the ants real.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, this will be amazing because we're going to be stuck together in this. And I can play Krabby really well. Sean Astin.
Yeah.
Yeah, buddy,
didn't last long on it.
No.
He dies pretty quickly.
Lucky fucker. Spoiler alert. No, he's the best. And he said he just run a Ironman triathlon. And you saw how fat he was. I'm like, did you? You what? And he's the nicest guy in the world. I go, well, there's no way you just ran over. And he did. He showed me the video, but I was like, okay, I can do it apparently. But he is the nicest guy anyway.
as a little bit of a quick thing, did you know Michael Jackson?
I had dinner with him a bunch of times at the Marvin Davis's house, who was, they were friends with Marvin Davis owned Fox and Beverly Hills Hotel, and I was friends with him. And so, yeah, I sat up there to be like Marvin Davis and Frank Sinatra and Sidney Poitier and Don Rickles and those guys. I watched the documentary.
The one that they had. Yeah. Well, they've now rescinded that one, the HBO one.
Yeah, who's rescinded it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, do you think it's pretty legit? Or
yeah.
Or, yeah, do you have really?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, is I have a childhood that, I mean, come on. I'm going to ask you something. Do you take your kids over to stay with adults?
Well, that's the problem. Absolutely.
That's a big problem.
Absolutely not. But isn't that also on the parent side of things?
That is on the parent side. Everything's on the parent side.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's completely on the parent side. That's what I even thought about that documentary.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Leaving Neverland, which was on HBO, which they've taken it down now because a lot of people have come out and said that these claims aren't true and it's very biased and this and the other thing. But
number one, the parent, what the fuck is going on?
Agreed.
Let's just start right there.
Right.
Because Michael Jackson was unwell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, let's just start. I'm taking my child to sleep in the bed with a man, mm-hmm. and I'm sleeping in the other room.
Mm-hmm. Or downstairs or whatever, yeah. No, right there. No matter what the intentions are, to me, that's
bad. Right. Yeah. Okay. And this happens again and again, and it's insidious, but it's also the way, and I got to put this on Michael Jackson and people like him, it's the manipulative way that they do that. I am telling you, I grew up, there's a pedophile in my neighborhood that my mom left him before she left our family with him. It's somebody that I ended up going back as an adult and finding and confronting. You can Google this story. And then 30 other kids came forward and we stopped him from adopting boys. I'm telling you, sometimes they manipulate a kid by threatening his family, threatening, sometimes by, but I'll tell you what, Michael Jackson groomed these kids.
Mm-hmm.
Also, he was an addict. He was a drug addict, and he was an addict. And, you know, he had this terrible childhood. And so then you get this gray area where he's not, unless you are impeccable with your, not just your character, but your mental health, your chemical health, you know, and then he's in bed with, you know, he was f***ed up in a couple of ways, and you just, man, children are, you talk about these Fabergé eggs being so, you don't, you know.
So precious.
Children.
Yeah.
So you're Michael Jackson's all f***ed up. He's f***ed up on chemicals. He's f***ed up on whatever. And he's got children in his bed. It'd be like having just stacks of these eggs that you just can't, you can crush. So he's not, it's a f***ed up thing. And I, you know, it's bad. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying, well, I'm saying psychologically, there's no, he f***ed those kids are f***ed up for their parents for their whole life.
Mm-hmm.
To be put in those positions.
Whether there's a physical or not, the mental part makes you warp them for life.
Let me tell you something. If that mental part is there, you know, they're, trauma, you know, it's hard to tell. It's hard to, you know, I think everybody's going for the big gotcha, the big thing that we need to say, well, but this didn't, you know, if you have this emotional, say, well, he didn't, penetrate by whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I tell you what, this adult child, it's beyond inappropriate. And if you keep moving that line to go, yeah, but this thing, you know, children are children. Adults are adults. You know, your childhood is just, you know, you just got this one thing you can't really get back.
Yeah, right. Agreed.
And some of these adults are vampires of people's childhoods, you know, because they never emotionally grew, and they just are, you know. I mean, we see this in very various ways in relationships. I don't know if you ever had relationships with women that were just never grew emotionally. So you can't have a disagreement because they free, you know, they never have a sense of self. They never have any, you know, and they also like, I mean, you know, let's go toy shopping. Oh, but I'm Michael Jackson. I'm soft. I am an artist. I am, oh, I, you know, okay, but it's awful. People, you know, people that become priests as a setup for this thing. You know, if you're a pedophile or if you have some of that, pedophiles are a big area. There's a big
and wide net.
Yeah. But also your head, you know, that disease, it's like alcoholism, it is trying to kill me at all times still. You know, I'm sober. I've been sober, but that there's a voice in there that's like, yeah, but maybe you could, that's always going to be there. And if you have, you know, if you have the proclivity to do that, to do this thing, for what I understand, there's like, well, but what if you, yeah, this is going to be okay. And you know, there are rules that you,
right.
You know, and also he was an addict.
Yeah.
He was on drugs.
Yeah.
Taking drugs. And nobody could, you know.
No. Well, no, I'm like you said, I mean, it's
what are you thinking? Tell me what you think. Help me. I want to hear what you think.
My thoughts on it are, like you just said, physical or not, the concept of it is so out of whack and so in Neverland. It's completely inappropriate. It's completely insane. It rests on the parents' decision to allow it. And the kids are warped for life no matter what. You know, I mean,
I want to get Lisa Marie in here. Have you ever talked to her?
No.
You know, I know her mom. I mean, I don't want to burn her mom with it, but I do want to say, what the f***?
Right.
I mean, she married him. Well, her childhood is like, but it wasn't quite like us. Her mom is solid gold.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to say, like, what the f***? Now right. I put it on her. No, don't even say I put it on her. For real. Like, but I do want to talk to her, like,
we'd like to know what was the story with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But listen, we're winding down here. There's a couple last minute things for you. Do you have a tattoo of Stephen King?
Stephen King, no.
Oh, okay. You don't have a tattoo. Do you have a tattoo of somebody with Stephen?
Is that for the Steven Seagal?
I don't know.
No.
Okay. Because I, you know, here's why you never read Wikipedia.
Yeah.
That said that you had a tattoo, that you used to have a tattoo of Roseanne, that you get switched the tattoo, you just changed the face of it to Stephen King.
No. Somebody,
dude, I'm telling you.
I'm going to read this. I did have a Roseanne tattoo, and from my nipple to my collarbone, and they got it removed.
Oh, you got it removed.
Like 7 sessions.
Oh, my God.
And then she, honest to God, I had that, and then she had a property, a tattoo on her butt that said property of Tom Arnold, which made me the fourth largest property owner in California. They say, but no, she did have a property. She just had hers covered up. But man, I had this fucking, you can see on the internet that old tattoo.
Uh-huh.
It was crazy I got that tattoo. I got it right before we broke up, too, like an asshole. Like, this is going to save the marriage. And she's like, oh, no, it's not. I'm like, what?
Okay, dude, here's Wikipedia, all right? In 2016, Arnold's chest tattoo, formerly Barr's face until he covered it with Stephen King's face in 1994, was added to GQ's list of best, worst, and weirdest celebrity tattoos.
Yeah, no, I don't know anything about that.
Hey, Wikipedia said that I died twice, and that wasn't true either. So
wait a minute. You're not dead?
I'm not.
I would have come here.
It's the zombie of Jericho.
I know. That's what I thought it was. My kids love zombies. They do.
Last two questions for you. What's your favorite performance that you've ever had, your best movie? And then what's the worst movie you ever made?
Well, you know, there is a movie called Happy Endings that was pretty good in it. You know, I love True Lies. It's just straight up.
That's a great
performance. Movie, yeah. Happy Endings, a movie where that Don Roos wrote, directed, and I felt very fortunate to be there. I'm Jason Ritter's dad. I'm Maggie Gyllenhaal is my girlfriend. Lisa Kudrow. It's a great story. A lot of great people in it. You know, it's a movie called Gardens of the Night, which I just happened to see recently. I play a pedophile.
Oh, wow.
It's a tough one. Kevin Zegers and I, John Malkovich is a good guy in this, but it is a...
That's a deep dive.
Well done movie. Yeah. And it won a bunch of awards in Europe. And Damian Harris is the director, and he worked so hard on this. And so many great actors. Evan Ross, Diana Ross's son, he plays the older version of one of the kids, and his kid goes to school with my kids now. And he's such a good young actor, a good boy too, and good. You know, I don't usually watch myself, but my son, 6-year-old son, put that on at the office. I walked in there. I'm like, oh, whoa. But there's nothing graphic in it. I was watching it, and he just asked me, because you see me kidnap, sort of manipulate the kids, this young girl who is Ryan Simpkins. She is so good. Mm. She's grown up now, but she is so good. I'm explaining, well, she was a kid, and I asked her, me and my partner, Kevin Seegers, who was mean to her, I said, to go in our house to visit. Does she ever get back to her parents, Dad? And she does, mm-hmm. like, in the movie. I had to fast forward to that. And, yeah. But, you know, it's really well done. That's cool. You know, but it's a tough subject.
Yeah.
But it was, they researched it about these children of the night that are down here on Hollywood Boulevard, how they get there, what happens, and can they go home? And, mm-hmm. you know, things happen to a lot of us, you know, when we're young, and you know, we can't go home, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, even those, the boys in the Neverland, mm-hmm. they're sitting there talking about it, you know. We can all, you know, the one good thing about that, something like that, is other parents sit there and go, and there's been several other documentaries on Netflix about people that were, the family trusted, like, and it's crazy that they trust these people, but now we see, and the rest of us go, oh my God, yeah, mm-hmm. let's, you know, really look out for our kids.
Right.
So, you know, anytime we can learn something, you know.
Yeah. What's the worst movie you've ever been?
Oh God, there's been, I remember this one, God damn, what's it called? The financier, his girlfriend was the star. Suddenly, oh my God, we filmed that in Austin. And we had so much fun though. Oh, let's see, Randall Badenkoff was there. It was so much fun. What was it? It was just, I don't want to make anybody feel bad, but there were so many good actors hired. I got paid so much money. It was so fun. We were laughing. Oh my God.
I'm just trying to find
there's
right
been
now.
So many.
Just Sue Me?
Yes. Oh my God, it was so much fun. Sure, I was terrible, but I remember we were sitting around just laughing. And it wasn't the young lady's fault. She was really a nice person. And don't hold that against her. And by the way, I didn't hold it against him until he paid. He was the guy that was amazing to us. And it probably wasn't the worst. It was probably been 50 worse. But I just want to say the experience. And there's been times when we've been laughing. I can think of other times where actors would get laughing fits and the directors get really mad. Me and an actor would be, you know, especially a young actor, and just laughing and laughing and laughing and about how ridiculous
right.
the situations were. Yeah. Those are pretty wonderful times. And, you know.
Well, dude, it's great.
Hey, man, this last movie I just wrapped a couple weeks ago, Cloris Leachman plays my mother-in-law, and she turned 93 while we were filming it. And she and I really bonded, and to work with somebody like that. And Jennifer Tilly's my wife in this, and all these other,
What's it called?
It's called High Holiday. Mm-hmm. And there's a million great actors. And to have that opportunity to work with all these great people still, and it's about this conservative family. I play sort of a Trump guy running for the lieutenant governor of Texas. I'm running for governor, and I'm a build the wall guy, and I invite this big right wing journalist to visit my family at the holidays, and I'm going to show him how the real American family is. And my daughter decides she's going to put some drugs in the food because she and I aren't getting along. She doesn't know the journalist is coming home, and there's stuff in the salad, and it is crazy. and before it's too late, and the guy's there, he's the biggest, but it's funny, and it's kind of believable, but it's great. Yeah. And then of course the family's bonded at the end, and you know, but a bunch of great. You know,
well, yeah, man. Well, dude, it's great talking to you.
Thanks,
like
buddy.
I said, it's cool to see you again after 15 years.
Man.
All right, dude.
All right, dude.